What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to WFAN's Baseball Insiders for Wednesday, January 26th. I'm Sweeney Murdy along with Ed Coleman. And big news on Tuesday night, the Hall of Fame class of 2022 is complete. We spoke about all the Veterans Committee selections a few weeks ago. David Ortiz gets added to this year's class. He comes in at just under 78%. Of course, 75% is a threshold. Everybody else missed for various reasons. We'll get into that. But Eddie, I think it's always worth coming off the top of these Hall of Fame discussions and rewarding the people who got rewarded with congratulations. Okay. And there are different reasons and factors around this, but I think we start by, at least I would, by saying congratulations, David Ortiz. You know, it's a wonderful day to be David Ortiz.
Absolutely. You know, and I have no problem with Big Poppy in the Hall of Fame. Some people did, obviously, but you know, listen, when you look at Ortiz's career, going from Minnesota to Boston, he almost became a different player in Boston. You start, I guess, with the DH, Sweeney, because there are people who have a DH prejudice, much like closer. I always look at DHs and closers as kind of the same. You have to be dominant to me to be in that, in the Hall of Fame. And but the only other DH is Edgar, correct, who's in the Hall of Fame. And I thought he was dominant during his time playing. And I think Ortiz was, too. And there was some skepticism, I know, with Big Poppy with PEDs because he was mentioned in a PED survey that was back in 2003. But again, there were, I think, some false positives, false negatives, whatever, during that time. You know, when he was in his say mid-30s, you know, from 2010 to like 2016, he never tested positive. He was being tested during that time. He was raking like you wouldn't believe. Think of the 2013 World Series when he put up just phenomenal numbers. I mean, and he was, you know, pretty much an old man at that time. Okay. I don't want to, you know, predate him, but, you know, he had already, you know, he was on the backside of his career at that time, and three world championships in Boston, you know, the stuff off the field as well, too. He was obviously an inspirational leader for that team. So I had no problems whatsoever with David Ortiz being enshrined. I wish him, you know, success, good luck. And I think that'll be a hell of a speech at Cooperstown. Big Poppy is through, and Red Sox Nation, I'm sure, will be there, too.
Got to get the dump buttons ready and the delays and the bleeps ready for David Ortiz and his Hall of Fame speech. But, you know, I think the important thing, because there's, you know, we can't lump every PED issue into one giant basket for various reasons. And Ortiz is a good example of this because the 2003 survey testing, as you said, there were some indications back then and even today that false positives were involved. And I say this now knowing that living in a COVID world, we have an idea what false positives really mean at this point, right? Most of us do. Yep. So the idea that let's say that is, you know, if that's a factor, as you said, the rest of his career is spent during PED testing and not a single drop. So nothing has stuck to him. The original 2003 survey testing didn't stick to him because he denied it. And then nothing else came up. He got 78% of the vote. Contrast that with Alex Rodriguez, who in the 2003 survey testing, after that, his name came out in that, he took the opportunity to then admit freely to 3 years worth of PED usage. And then he said at a tearful press conference, judge me from this day forward. Well, within several months of that press conference, he was then supposedly meeting with Tony Bosch. And enough evidence existed, even though there wasn't a positive test, enough evidence existed that he got embroiled in the Biogenesis scandal and was suspended for an entire year for that. So 2003 testing did not stick to Ortiz. 2003 testing and then some stuck to Alex Rodriguez, which is why he clocked in at only 34%. So while the initial 2003 testing involves both of those guys, they're not created equal. You can't treat them equal. And that's, I think, that's why they both ended up, you know, 40% difference between the two.
Yep. What if Alex was at what, 34%?
Correct.
I think. And that's, you know, Manny Ramirez was what, at 36, I think, something 20, like that.
29.
But, yeah. 29. Okay. 29. Mm-hmm. But I think the highest or his first year, I think Manny's first year was 36, right? He was at 36. So Alex came in a little under him. And it'll be interesting to watch. You know, I guess, you know, now with Bonds and Clemens and Sosa off the ballot at this time, and Schilling as well, too. What's going to be interesting to me moving forward is now those guys are not there to be voted for. And certainly there were people that did vote for them. So who are they going to vote for now? And what's that going to mean for the guys who have picked up percentages this year, like Scott Rolen, like Billy Wagner, like Andrew Jones, people like that, what that's going to mean for them with the other guys now off the ballot and swept over to the one of the era committees. I guess we'll have to decide what's in store for the quote unquote PED users.
Yeah, I think it's a great question and a lot of different levels to that. I should mention to everybody that we don't have Hall of Fame votes. We are broadcasters, not members of the BBWAA. So we do not have votes. We have our opinions and this and that follow closely. And we both know several people who do vote, you know, dozens of people probably who do vote. But our votes don't matter. So that being said, I haven't asked you in a long time. I don't know how you feel about it. I've kind of waffled on the idea because I haven't had to commit. I haven't had to put my name on a ballot and vote. Mm-hmm. This is what my stance is. So I've kind of gone back and forth on this, but I kind of came to the conclusion about the other day of, you know, we mentioned the differences between Ortiz and A-Rod. Bonds and Clemens, the argument is about, you know, they were Hall of Famers before they were suspected of use, but, you know, to me, that's, you know, I was a law-abiding citizen until I robbed that bank. I don't really love the reasoning there, but I can see the reason to keep them out because they chose a certain path, and the path they chose, there's enough evidence to support it, led to great monetary gains. They played longer and made a lot more money in their careers and got famous by breaking all-time records and doing that. That's the reward they chose. And if, you know, the baseball writers have their say in whether or not they go in the Hall of Fame, get even more honors and awards, I think it's okay for them to say, you know what, I'm not comfortable rewarding you. And let's be real. They both got over 65% of the vote. Eddie, that will win you every election in this country, 65%.
Sure. Okay? Yep.
But 75 is a hard threshold. I can understand the reasoning to withhold because it's as much as we want to say, oh, everybody was doing it, everybody knew about it. Everybody didn't know about it. Everybody wasn't doing it. And the people that did it knew they were doing something wrong because they weren't doing it out in the open. They weren't, you know, they weren't telling us, hey, look at this stuff I'm doing here. Can you hold this needle for me? That's not what was happening. They hid what they were doing, which means they knew it was wrong. And when you're doing that, you're choosing a set of rewards, which longer playing career, more money doing it. And to me, listen, if they got voted in, Eddie, I think I'd be, you know, yeah, you deal with it. You just move on. They're Hall of Famers. I'm not going to protest the Hall of Fame because they were in it. But if you ask me my say, I would tell you that I wouldn't feel comfortable rewarding them based on what we just talked about.
Nor would a lot of guys that are in the Hall of Fame. You know, I think of the late Tom Seaver, and I know that Tom Seaver would not have approved or Barry Bonds or Roger Clemens or Sammy Sosa or whoever in the Hall of Fame if there is enough evidence that they were PED users. And obviously, I guess, you know, increased their likelihood of getting into the Hall of Fame because of that. It's interesting. I was listening to Greg Maddux a couple of days ago, and Maddux had I guess, has the opinion that I kind of have, and that's that I thought Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens were both Hall of Famers before they started ingesting PEDs. Now, I don't know when they did, okay, but you can kind of draw a demarcation line with both of them. I think in particular with Bonds, too. And that's, you know, I said, if Greg Maddux feels that way, I watched Greg Maddux beat the Mets for so many years, and I have the utmost respect for him. So if he feels that way, that's okay with me. Maybe that makes it justified. You know, what was interesting to me, though, is that I thought about the 2020 election over the last couple of days. Now, why is that, Ed? Well, you know, over even going back a couple of days ago, the percentages seemed to be there for Bonds and Clemens. And I was thinking back to the election in 2020 when the votes first started coming in. You know, Trump had a huge lead on Joe Biden at that time. Now, why was that? Well, because, you know, a lot of people were voting by mail and getting those ballots. And those are the ones that, you know, are going to come in and going to be counted or whatever. The more traditional way of voting, which the way I go to the ballot box all the time, whatever. And those votes hadn't come in yet. And obviously that's swung the election that way. And I think, you know, the more traditional way of voting, I guess, you know, older guys will wait a little bit longer. And that's why, you know, a lot of those votes came in late and pushed that percentage back down under 75 for both of them. But, you know, I've always felt that way with Bonds and Clemens. I thought they were Hall of Famers before, you know, before you hit that mark where, you know, it was obvious that they were using PEDs. Maybe it was a little bit harder to tell with Clemens. But I think there were enough guys like Tom Seaver that are in the Hall of Fame that would feel uncomfortable with those guys in the Hall of Fame. So I have no problem with them being out.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, and like, I think you and I just proved how hard it is to agree on the point and get 75% of people to agree, you know, and say, okay, this is who I want in. Your Seaver point is an interesting one that I, you know, I want to get into you a little bit more with, because this isn't the end for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. The different versions of committees break down the eras and voting every few years. It's gotten a little, the pattern of every 3 years that they established has gotten a little out of whack because of COVID. So there's going to, the era that Bonds and Clemens are a part of will be voted on again in December of 2022, and then again in December of 2024. So this year and 2 years from now, they will have a chance again, potentially, to be on this ballot after going through screening committees. And there'll be a 16 member panel that gets to vote again, that is made up of former players, Hall of Famers, executives, managers, and media members, historians, really, no more than media members. But, you know, Seaver, you mentioned,
and you're going to need 12 votes.
You still need 12 votes. And this is the tricky part, right? Because the last two committees, the ones that elected Jack Morris and Alan Trammell, and the one that elected Ted Simmons, the people on those committees, the players, the former players, were George Brett, Rod Carew, Dennis Eckersley, Dave Winfield, and Robin Yount, I think. And in one of the other ones more recently, Eddie Murray and Ozzie Smith subbed out. I think they subbed out for Carew and Eckersley, or Eckersley, but I could be wrong. But just reading these names, Brett, Carew, Eckersley, Winfield, Yount, Murray, and Ozzie Smith. I'm not positive that you're, and this doesn't count the other group. I'm not positive you're going to get 12 out of the 16 votes on this committee to say, oh yeah, they absolutely belong in, and right this wrong, so to speak. You know, if there's an egregious, if people think this is an egregious oversight and that 65% should, you know, there's another 35% that don't know what they're doing. Well, I'm going to challenge you that I'm going to feel pretty good about saying, Ed, that I don't think 12 out of these 16 votes are coming based on the makeup of the Hall of Fame players alone that make up these committees.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Tell me who comprises the committee, and I'll tell you what the chances are. But I think you're right. You know, you need five no votes, basically. All right, you need 12 of 16. If you get five no votes, they're not going in. So the names you mentioned, you know, if those guys or their type are on the committee, then I think it's going to be very difficult. And I'll say this, too, because Curt Schilling, you know, gets lumped in with Bonds and Clemens and Sosa. But I think Schilling may have a better chance with a committee like that. Now, Schilling went down this year, but, you know, that to me is as much in part because of, you know, his declaration of, you know, take me off your ballot. I don't want your Hall of Fame. Right. And his Twitter tantrums in politics. Let's face it. Let's be honest. I mean, that's really what turned a lot of people off. Now, if those guys don't care about that and you look at Schilling and his career, that's, to me, a Hall of Fame career. It is a Hall of Fame career. And there, I agree. You know, to my knowledge, it is, he's not tied in with the PED, doubt and controversy like the others are. So I think he may have a better chance than any of those other guys that obviously have been tied and have links to PEDs. And we'll see. I mean, you know, maybe not. Maybe there are enough people that are ticked off at Schilling and just, you know, want to see him go away. But I think he may have a better chance at something like that than some of the other guys would.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think, you know, you've heard enough just anecdotes from Hall of Famers and their stances on PED guys. I don't think it's going to be a walk-in for Bonds and Clemens on those ballots either. We'll see. And I agree with Schilling. I thought should have been in years before, but the crowded ballots certainly affected him as much as anything else. And the big drop off this year down to 58%. I mean, that's really just about his own, I think people took him seriously. He said, take me off the ballot. Well, they can't take you off the ballot, but we could choose not to vote for you. So I think that is probably what played into that. You mentioned a couple other names that I think are really interesting. Because of the, I have hiccups and we're not going to edit out my hiccups. So I'm just going to tell you that I have hiccups.
Go through with it.
I've done post-game shows like this. So trust me, I figured out how to get through it. Scott Rolen, fifth year on the ballot, 63%. Todd Helton, fourth year on the ballot, 52%. Billy Wagner, seventh year on the ballot, 51%. And Andrew Jones, fifth year on the ballot for Andrew Jones, 41%. 41 still a pretty significant ways back, but Rolen at 63, Wagner at 51, Helton at 52. Those three guys are going to make significant progress because the ballot's going to be a whole lot less crowded next year. And I think at least Rolen and maybe Helton get in. Wagner is going to be difficult to gauge because of how we view closers.
Yeah, I think, you know, Scott Rolen is, I think he's going to be a lock next year. Anytime I watch Scott Rolen, I watched a great defensive player, a guy who could hit in the clutch. Anytime I watch a third baseman, I think of the true throws that Scott Rolen had all the time at third base, regardless of the angle that he threw it. It always ended up right around belt level of the first baseman, okay? Regardless
of where Patrick Mahomes throwing from third base, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he was magnificent. And I think, you know, he's close enough. And I think with the less crowded ballot, as you mentioned, Sweeney, I think he's going to be in next year. Helton is interesting. Is an interesting guy, I think, simply because he played his entire career in Colorado. Larry Walker spent most of his career in Colorado, but he was elsewhere. He had Montreal, he had St. Louis. So, is there going to be a bias against the Colorado numbers for Helton? I think he's close to a Hall of Famer. I'm not sure whether the writers will put him in or not. I think Andrew Jones is another guy there. I think, as I mentioned, Rolen, I think, is going to be a lock next year. The interesting guy to me is Billy Wagner, though, simply because I think closers have to be dominant. And, you know, Billy could be dominant. There's no question. a lot of people bring up Trevor Hoffman when they talk about Wagner, and that's really kind of an interesting comparison to me, because Hoffman was a changeup guy. Billy was all fire, you know, hard fastball and hard slider. He'd come right after you. Similar numbers in a lot of ways, ERA, strikeouts, WAR, but the number of saves a lot different. Hoffman had more games, but he had 601 saves. Billy was a little over 400, 422, I think. So there's a disparity there, but you know, was he a dominant guy when he was on? Yeah, he was a dominant guy. So that's what you look for, whether you dominated at that point in time in your career and whether you were one of the dominant closers. And I think he was. I think he's got a shot. Let's put it that way. And he's come up 15% the previous 2 years. I think he came up 6% this year, not as much, but he's making progress steady. And he still has, I think, 3 more years on the ballot. I think he's been through 7. So he still has time to make that up. And I think there's a good possibility that he may make that up. And with a less crowded ballot, maybe he can make a big jump next year.
I agree with you on Roland, because, you know, one of the things people talk about is, like, do you, when you watch the guy, did you think you were watching a Hall of Famer? And there's a lot of people that say no about Scott Roland. My answer is, yeah, I don't think you're watching closely enough. If that's your answer, because yeah, when I was watching, I thought I was watching one of the best players in the sport. And over the long haul, towards the end of his career, some durability issues cropped up, but it wasn't so much early in his career as people think. And he still has, you know, homers and doubles. It compares kind of Edgar Martinez with homers and doubles and power numbers. Add on top of that, the 8 gold gloves. I don't think we ever reward defense enough when we're talking about this. I think we penalize it too much. And as far as Wagner, you know, I heard Brad Lidge, who, you know, is a little biased because he played with Billy Wagner, heard him make an excellent point. He says, if you're not going to put Billy Wagner in, what does the next closer have to do to get in after, you know, Rivera and Hoffman? You know, what more does a closer have to do? Closers, I think, have to be measured a little bit differently, because they generally don't. I just named two guys who are the exception, but they generally don't play 20 years like some of these guys who are in the Hall of Fame accumulate, you know, the 3,000 hits and the 500 home runs. Shelf life of a closer is not as long. So when you get somebody who does it for, say, 10 years or a little bit longer, like Wagner did, I think you have to consider that. And the 400 saves is a really good number. The dominance with the strikeouts is a really good number. I think, you know, Wagner is just, you know, and we just mentioned it earlier with Ortiz and the DH. You know, these are real positions, and they have been for 50 years. People have been employing DH, and they've used closers to save games. You know, it's time to stop treating them as if they're some second-class citizens. I thought the 2019 election was great for that, because you had Mariano Rivera and Lee Smith, and you had Edgar Martinez and Harold Baines. You can debate all you want about how Harold Baines got in and whether he deserves to be in, but he spent a lot of years at DH to accumulate some numbers. Edgar Martinez, it was a win for closers and DHs, and recognizing that those are real positions. And I'd like to see that going forward, not just in that one election. Ortiz obviously furthers that. I think Wagner would further that. And Helton, it falls into the same category for me with a different example, because Coors Field is a real ballpark. It's a major league ballpark, and they play, you know, 81 games there every year, and every team has to go there. And it's been around for, you know, 25 years now. It's not something new. And guess what? There aren't 40 guys who have the numbers that Todd Helton put up as Colorado Rockies. You know, there's Lowry Walker, and there's Todd Helton, and a couple other guys did it, but not for a long period of time. And we've had enough people talk about the idea that coming in and out of Coors Field every other week for an entire season for 15 or 20 years has a certain effect. And I'm just now laughing because I remember something that happened to you in a Coors Field press box, running up and down between the press box and the broadcast level and trying to just speak, let alone, you know, hit 300 or, you know, play baseball.
I tried to talk when I couldn't.
Yeah, so I think it's a very real factor that we should recognize.
Absolutely. You know,
real estate thing, and baseball players play there and put up real numbers.
Yep, no, that's a great point. And, you know, one other thing on closers, too, that I guess we should keep in mind, you know, Hoffman had a great long career through changeups. Mariano had a great long career. He was a cutter guy. Okay. Not that he couldn't throw hard, but you know, some of the flamethrowers are probably not going to last that long. And Billy was a flamethrower. He was going to come at you as hard as he could and, you know, see it, try to hit it. Those guys probably aren't going to last as long or whatever. But I think he's made enough progress. That's what 30% over the last 3 years with a little left 15-6 with a left in that 15% airs to it.
There's one new name coming on the ballot next year, which is going to be interesting for a couple of different reasons. One, debating whether or not he actually is a Hall of Famer. I think there are plenty of people who think he is. And two, wondering how his own scandal is going to stick to him. Carlos Beltran, who we both covered, might have a little trouble overcoming the Astros situation. I don't know how much. I think we have a year to figure it out. But I thought he was a Hall of Fame player. And I thought winning the World Series in 2017 was the cherry on top. And until the scandal came out, I wouldn't have even questioned that he was going, whether or not he was going to be in the Hall of Fame. I think he'll still get there, but I think this Astros thing still throws a little bit of a wrench into it. What do you think?
I think that Carlos may be a committee guy eventually because of that. But I do think as time goes on, Sweeney, and again, he's going to come on next year. I think he'll get enough votes to keep himself on for a 10-year period. So I think over time, it will subside. You know, both managers who were suspended are now back in baseball, Alex Cora and A.J. Hinch. And I think the furor has subsided a little bit, maybe not with Yankee fans, with the Astros. But at the same time, I think over time that will subside somewhat. And I think, you know, Beltran, I think it will affect him, you know, at first. I do. And he may end up being a committee guy, very possibly. I think he's one of those guys who will get close. If he doesn't get in, if he doesn't get the 75%, I do think he'll get close because I think anyone who watched Carlos Beltran felt that, you know, he was a Hall of Fame type caliber player. I know he was a Hall of Fame player with the Mets during his tenure there. He signed a 7-year deal. I'm not going to say all 7 years were great, but I'd say 4.5 at least were just superb years. And, you know, you look at the work that he did, you know, in Kansas City and Houston before that and with the Yankees and that, I think he is a Hall of Famer.
I look at him, though, and I think I don't know if this has been by design, but he's, you know, he's clearly going to have some strategizing. If I was advising him, he has not spoken since being let go by the Mets and because and that happened in the wake of the scandal. He's not spoken out about any of it. If I'm advising him, he has to really put forth a strong effort in public before he hits the Hall of Fame ballot, or else, you know, I think his chances get torpedoed a great deal.
Yeah, no, I agree. And Carlos is that type of guy. I think that he will come clean. He'll admit his mistake. And in essence, he kind of has already. He knows that he messed up, but he's been very silent, very quiet. I agree. I think he's kind of waiting to get himself back into baseball and maybe, he'll talk a little bit more at that point in time. But, I do think that, you know, I never worried about Carlos Beltran's character. Let's put it that way. So, I think he regrets what he did in 2017. I think he realizes that he went over the line, in the spur of the moment at the time. Obviously, maybe you should have thought of it then, but he didn't. And again, that's something that I think he probably will clear up. But I agree with you. Yeah, he definitely has to do some PR stuff before he hits the Hall of Fame ballot.
The last 10 years of Hall of Fame voting seems to just elicit so much anger because of everybody's strong feelings about the different sides of these different scandals. And Schilling and Beltran have found themselves in completely different waters than Bonds and Clemens and everybody else. I hope that we're getting to a point where we can again talk about the greatness of players as opposed to all these other arguments. I think we should once again, though, make sure we properly congratulate David Ortiz. We watched a Hall of Fame player. We watched a Hall of Fame career. We knew there were some questions about it, but he got the votes. And in July, it's going to be a tremendous party for David Ortiz. And as much as it might pain Yankee fans to watch it happen, you just have to recognize that that's a great career and he's going to be celebrated as a great player. Now, to bring it back down again, we should probably just mention one time that, hey, there's meetings happening. And might actually have some progress, a little progress, maybe not much. There's movement here and there. There's still a few weeks before we have to consider drop dead dates, but at least they're talking about the CBA, Eddie.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I guess the best way to look at it at this point, and again, there's still a long way to go, but I think there are pathways for an agreement. And I think what's happened over the last couple of days and meeting again today after, you know, convening yesterday, I think that's a good sign. Are they in total agreement? No. And they still have a lot of stuff, and the luxury tax, they're still going to have to thresholds. They're still going to have to really try and sort out. That's going to be a sticking point, I think. But I think that they have at least created pathways for an agreement if they can, you know, keep their heads about them. Let's put it that way. I think there's been some progress, and that's a good sign. Just having them meet back-to-back days, I think, is a plus instead of meeting by Zoom and blowing it off after 7 or 10 minutes or so. So I think it's been a positive couple of days. Hopefully that positivity can continue.
I can't wait for you and I to like actually have discussions about the luxury tax, which affects both of the teams you cover now, equally.
I can't wait.
Fantastic. He's Ed Coleman. I'm Sweeney Murdy. Subscribe to WFAN's Baseball Insiders. We bring you some different things here and there during this offseason. And of course, whenever the season kicks off again, we are here with our regular Mets and Yankees coverage. Hit subscribe and review where you get your podcasts, Odyssey, Apple, or wherever else. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time. I agree with you on Roland because, you know, one of the things people talk about is like, when you watch the guy, did you think you were watching a Hall of Famer? And there's a lot of people that say no about Scott Rolen. My answer is, yeah, I don't think you're watching closely enough. If that's your answer. Because, yeah, when I was watching, I thought I was watching one of the best players in the sport. And over the long haul, towards the end of his career, some durability issues cropped up. But it wasn't so much early in his career as people think. And he still has, you know, homers and doubles. It compares kind of Edgar Martinez with homers and doubles and power numbers. Add on top of that, the 8 gold gloves. I don't think we ever reward defense enough when we're talking about this. I think we penalize it too much. And as far as Wagner, you know, I heard Brad Lidge, who, you know, is a little biased because he played with Billy Wagner, heard him make an excellent point. He says, if you're not going to put Billy Wagner in, what does the next closer have to do to get in after, you know, Rivera and Hoffman? You know, what more does a closer have to do? Closers, I think, have to be measured a little bit differently because they generally don't. I just named two guys who are the exception, but they generally don't play 20 years like some of these guys who are in the Hall of Fame accumulate, you know, the 3,000 hits and the 500 home runs. Shelf life of a closer is not as long. So when you get somebody who does it for, say, 10 years or a little bit longer, like Wagner did, I think you have to consider that. And the 400 saves is a really good number. The dominance with the strikeouts is a really good number. I think, you know, Wagner is just, you know, and we just mentioned it earlier with Ortiz and the DH. You know, these are real positions, and they have been for 50 years. People have been employing DH, and they've used closers to save games. You know, it's time to stop treating them as if they're some second-class citizens. I thought the 2019 election was great for that because you had Mariano Rivera and Lee Smith, and you had Edgar Martinez and Harold Baines. You can debate all you want about how Harold Baines got in and whether he deserves to be in, but he spent a lot of years at DH to accumulate some numbers. Edgar Martinez, it was a win for closers and DHs and recognizing that those are real positions. And I'd like to see that going forward, not just in that one election. Ortiz obviously furthers that. I think Wagner would further that. And Helton, it falls into the same category for me with a different example because Coors Field is a real ballpark. It's a major league ballpark, and they play, you know, 81 games there every year, and every team has to go there. And it's been around for, you know, 25 years now. It's not something new. And guess what? There aren't 40 guys who have the numbers that Todd Helton put up as Colorado Rockies. You know, there's there's Larry Walker and there's Todd Helton and a couple other guys did it, but not for a long period of time. And we've had enough people talk about the idea that coming in and out of Coors Field, every other week for an entire season for 15 or 20 years has a certain effect. And I'm just now laughing because I remember something that happened to you in a Coors Field press box, running up and down between the press box and the broadcast level and trying to just speak, let alone, hit 300 or, play baseball.
I didn't talk when I couldn't.
Yeah. So I think it's a very real factor that we should recognize.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know,
real estate thing. And baseball players play there and put up real numbers.
Yep, no, that's a great point. And one other thing on closers too that I guess we should keep in mind, Hoffman had a great long career through changeups. Mariano had a great long career. He was a cutter guy. Okay, not that he couldn't throw hard, but some of the flamethrowers are probably not going to last that long. And Billy was a flamethrower. He was going to come at you as hard as he could and, see it, try to hit it. Those guys probably aren't going to last as long or whatever. But I think he's made enough progress. That's what, 30% over the last 3 years, with a little left 15-6, with a left in that 15% airs to it.
There's one new name coming on the ballot next year, which is going to be interesting for a couple of different reasons. One, debating whether or not he actually is a Hall of Famer. I think there are plenty of people who think he is. And two, wondering how his own scandal is going to stick to him. Carlos Beltran, who we both covered, might have a little trouble overcoming the Astros situation. I don't know how much. I think we have a year to figure it out. But I thought he was a Hall of Fame player. And I thought winning the World Series in 2017 was the cherry on top. And until the scandal came out, I wouldn't have even questioned that he was going, whether or not he was going to be in the Hall of Fame. I think he'll still get there, but I think this Astros thing still throws a little bit of a wrench into it. What do you think?
I think that Carlos may be a committee guy eventually because of that. But I do think as time goes on, Sweeney, and again, he's going to come on next year. I think he'll get enough votes to keep himself on for a 10-year period. So I think over time, it will subside. Both managers who were suspended are now back in baseball, Alex Cora and A.J. Hinch. And I think the furor has subsided a little bit, maybe not with Yankee fans, with the Astros. But at the same time, I think over time that will subside somewhat. And I think, Beltran, I think it will affect him, at first. I do. And he may end up being a committee guy, very possibly. I think he's one of those guys who will get close. If he doesn't get the 75%, I do think he'll get close, because I think anyone who watched Carlos Beltran felt that, he was a Hall of Fame type caliber player. I know he was a Hall of Fame player with the Mets during his tenure there. He signed a 7-year deal. I'm not going to say all 7 years were great, but I'd say 4.5 at least were just superb years. And, you look at the work that he did, in Kansas City and Houston before that, and with the Yankees and that, I think he is a Hall of Famer.
I look at him though, and I think, I don't know if this has been by design, but he's clearly going to have some strategizing. If I was advising him, he has not spoken since being let go by the Mets, and because that happened in the wake of the scandal, he's not spoken out about any of it. If I'm advising him, he has to really put forth a strong effort in public before he hits the Hall of Fame ballot, or else, I think his chances get torpedoed a great deal.
Yeah, no, I agree. And Carlos is that type of guy. I think that he will come clean. He'll admit his mistake. And in essence, he kind of has already. He knows that he messed up, but he's been very silent, very quiet. I agree. I think he's kind of waiting to get himself back into baseball, and maybe, he'll you know, he'll talk a little bit more at that point in time. But, you know, I do think that, you know, I never worried about Carlos Beltran's character. Let's put it that way. So, you know, I think he regrets what he did in 2017. I think he realizes that he went over the line, you know, in the spur of the moment at the time, obviously. Maybe you should have thought of it then, but he didn't. And again, you know, that's something that I think he probably will clear up. But I agree with you. Yeah, he definitely has to do some PR stuff before he hits the Hall of Fame ballot.
The last 10 years of Hall of Fame voting seems to just elicit so much anger because of everybody's strong feelings about the different sides of these different scandals. And Schilling and Beltran have found themselves in completely different waters than Bonds and Clemens and everybody else. I hope that we're getting to a point where we can again talk about the greatness of players as opposed to all these other arguments. I think we should once again, though, make sure we properly congratulate David Ortiz. We watched a Hall of Fame player. We watched a Hall of Fame career. We knew there were some questions about it, but he got the votes. And in July, it's going to be a tremendous party for David Ortiz. And as much as it might pain Yankee fans to watch it happen, you just have to recognize that that's a great career and he's going to be celebrated as a great player. Now, to bring it back down again, we should probably just mention one time that, hey, there's meetings happening. And we might actually have some progress, a little progress, maybe not much. There's movement here and there. There's still a few weeks before we have to consider drop dead dates, but at least they're talking about the CBA, Eddie.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, I guess the best way to look at it at this point, and again, there's still a long way to go, but I think there are pathways for an agreement. And I think what's happened over the last couple of days and meeting again today after, you know, convening yesterday, I think that's a good sign. Are they in total agreement? No. And they still have a lot of stuff and the luxury tax, they're still going to have to luxury tax thresholds. They're still going to have to really try and sort out. That's going to be a sticking point, I think. But I think that they have at least created pathways for an agreement if they can, you know, keep their heads about them. Let's put it that way. I think there's been some progress, and that's a good sign. Just having them meet back-to-back days, I think, is a plus instead of meeting by Zoom and blowing it off after 7 or 10 minutes or so. So I think it's been a positive couple of days. Hopefully that positivity can continue.
I can't wait for you and I to, like, actually have discussions about the luxury tax, which affects both of the teams you cover now, equally.
I can't wait.
Fantastic. He's Ed Coleman. I'm Sweeney Murdy. Subscribe to WFAN's Baseball Insiders. We bring you some different things here and there during this offseason. And of course, whenever the season kicks off again, we are here with our regular Mets and Yankees coverage. Hit subscribe and review where you get your podcasts, Odyssey, Apple, or wherever else. Thank you for listening. We'll catch you next time.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.